Welcome to Ufahamu Africa, a podcast about life and politics on the African continent. I'm Rachel Beatty-Riedel, one of your hosts, and I'm here today with three very special fellows who are here at Cornell University as a part of our inaugural cohort of Mandela Washington Fellows. We are so pleased to be able to learn from them, from their expertise, about the topic of climate and sustainable environments. So each of our guests today is an expert in these fields, and I'm going to do a very brief introduction of each of our fellows and then ask them to introduce themselves a little bit more and tell you, our listeners, about their background and how they came into their current role and how it connects to our topic about sustainability and environmental justice. So our first guest is Aisha Namuga from Uganda, who is a public interest litigation lawyer focused on the realization of the right to clean and healthy environments. Aisha, can you say hello to our listeners and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Rachel, for this opportunity. My name is Namuga Aisha. I am from Uganda. And as Rachel has said, I'm a public interest litigation lawyer and a political leader in my area. I come from Njeru, a small town in the eastern part of Uganda, which is the home of the source of the Nile. I am a legal officer as well for Earth and Rights Initiative. I am a woman counselor, and I sit on the Committee of Health and Education for Njeru Municipality. My main role is my side of public interest litigation. I'm focusing on my project for Clean the East, which shall focus on the home of the source of the Nile, Jinja and Njeru. Clean the East will have to do with clearing pollution of the water and the air by the industries in both these parts, and also dealing with poor waste management and disposal in these areas, which has been very rampant and extremely terrible for the environment.
Thank you so much, Aisha. We're so glad to have you here with us and for your work that you're doing. Our second guest is Bashiru Koruma from Sierra Leone. Bashiru is passionate about climate advocacy and youth activism in ecotourism and works with the Ministry of Tourism implementing government tourism policies. Bashiru, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your current roles and how they relate to climate justice and environmental sustainability?
Thank you very much. I would like to start by expressing my profound gratitude and appreciation for this privilege for being here today, inviting us on this particular important event. So I am Bashiru Koruma. I was born in a very small town, Matruchong, southern Sierra Leone. So I am a conservationist, natural resource management specialist, and youth and climate change activist. And I have been in this for the past 10 years now. So my role in this field is more or less like community mobilization, youth mobilization. I am a national coordinator for an organization called Climate Life. It is a youth-based organization that is found in about 40 countries. And I also have founded my own organization, which I am the president and CEO. I call it Keep Africa Beautiful Sierra Leone, in addition to me being the planning and product development officer at National Tourist Board in my country. So my role related to climate justice, we are living on the front line of climate change. The climate change impact is very evident. We are living with it every day in my country. And you look at the inequality, the social inequality in relation to access to information, in relation to access to education that relates to climate change, technology, and also resources. So that is where I came in, to like bring young people together, educate them, try to look at innovative ways to solve some of these challenges. So it is a role that is very important, because in these countries, like in Freetown, Sierra Leone, we had a landslide in 2017 that killed about 1,000 people in 5 minutes, which was as a result of climate change. So most of these people do not have access to information that may prevent some of these things. So that is why we come in, because I was fortunate to attend the COP26 and COP27. So some of this information we are exposed to, we have to relate them back to our people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us here today, Bashiro. And our third guest is Louise Takapso from Cameroon, who is a civil engineer and works for a government agency monitoring sustainability return on investment for local infrastructure projects. Louise, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your current roles?
Okay, Rachel, thank you. Thank you for having me here today. I'm very grateful. I appreciate it. I feel very honored. As she said, I'm Louise Takapso. I come from the most beautiful country in Africa, Cameroon. We call it the continent because it's very diverse. So I'm a civil engineer and a local development practitioner. I had the opportunity when I was, 21 years to be employed at the Special Council Support Fund for Mutual Assistance. We call it FECAM in French. So I had the opportunity to be employed there, recruited there. And I am today the head of service in charge of monitoring and control of revenue generating projects. The aim is to fund projects, developing projects for the regional and local authorities, that's on the basis of interregional and intercouncil balance. That is, we ensure access to basic infrastructures to all the regional and local councils through the regional and local authorities. So that's what we do.
Thank you so much for being here. So I wanted to jump right into the big picture question, right? We're talking about environmental justice, what sustainability looks like. And so I'm wondering, for each of you, from your vantage points, what is your ideal of a justice-oriented climate future? I mean, what are we aiming towards when you look at it from, you know, where you are, from Sierra Leone, from Uganda, from Cameroon? How do you envision well-being for humanity, well-being for the environment in a way that could be achieved by public policy and by governance and, you know, at a local scale, at a national scale, on an international scale? What do you dream of when you think of a just environment that's sustainable?
When I think about a just climate just future, I am thinking about people that are less privileged, that has contributed less to the impact of climate change, and how are they being factored in decisions that affect their lives? Because the climate crisis is not just about the emission of greenhouse gas. We are now looking at the human factor, people and places that their contribution to the problem, to the cause of a problem, is so small, is so minimal, is so infinitesimal, it is very inconsequential. So how are these people being factored? For example, in my country, Sierra Leone, each year we're having increase in sea level rise, which is causing flooding. We're having issues like extreme weather events, storms, heavy rains, change in weather patterns, which affects agricultural productivity, which affects food security, which affects access to clean water. And we also have poverty in the midst of everything. So now, these people are being affected by problem caused by the global north. Mm-hmm. So now, how is these people being represented in most of these decisions that are being made at global level? Mm-hmm. Some of these people are not even aware of the problems and its effects. So a climate just society, to me, is for us to now start building a future that will factor these people, their health, their education, their basic services. We're talking about people that even have less opportunity to have basic square meal. So how can we solve some of this problem? So I want to see a future wherein we create a just society for every humanity that is living. Now, this could be an economically sound policies for these people, an ecologically healthy society for them, a socially just society for them. More especially, children, more especially young people, which most of them has not contributed in any way to cause the problem of climate change. So those are some of the issues we think about when we talk about climate justice. The less privileged, people who are not being represented in the decision making, because how are these, the problem, the underlying cause of a problem lies on one side and the effects is impacting the other side. So this is what we are trying to bridge that gap so that the global north, we own the responsibility to actually finance the aspects of problems that is happening on that other side of the world so that we can bridge the gap, the inequality gap, the unjust gap. That is what I look for in the area of climate justice.
So well said, Bashiru. And Aisha, what about you? When you are thinking about a just climate future, what's your vision and how might we get there?
When I think about a just climate future, I think about our Ugandan constitution. I think about our national objectives and the role placed on the institutions of the Ugandan government and actually in general on all governments, if this is put in their national objectives. If we all work towards a sustainable development, putting human rights in mind, fine, because most people, of course, are looking at development. How is this going to affect development? We end up weighing and appreciating development more than human rights. They put so much weight and so much value on the investors' contribution to the economy of the country and neglect what the investors are actually doing to the country to abuse the environment and to abuse certain social rights of the people. So sustainability and climate justice would be seen if all of us do our part.
Thank you so much, Aisha. And Louise, what about you? What do you think in terms of a vision? And, you know, how might we get there?
Okay. Thank you, Aisha. I actually like what she said because I agree. In addition, I would like to say that when I think about sustainability, I think about two things, intergenerational and intragenerational. And if I'm talking about intragenerational, it means I'm talking about what the present generation is doing for the future generation, for those who have to come later. And so I think that it has to... Aisha has talked about the top down, and I would like to talk about the bottom up. Like, we should educate the people. We should tell the people, because I think that is where it all starts. Like, telling people, these are the measures you need to undertake in order to avoid. In Cameroon, for example, the climate changes or the climate injustice that we're actually facing are mostly associated to the changing weather patterns. In Cameroon, we don't have summer, Easter. We have dry season and rainy season. That's all. We have a dry season and a rainy season. But nowadays, we're experiencing so harsh dry climates. I mean, it's so hot when it's the dry season. It's so hot. And we don't understand. We're like, when did all this happen? And we're not, I mean, the industries are not that developed in our country. We're not that industrial. But I think it's so general that other parts of the continent, other parts of the world are actually doing things that damage the ozone layer, that damage the system. And then it just happens to have a general effect on all of us. And we have to cope with the consequences. And so what has to be done? For example, in FACOM, the organization in which I serve, we are ISO 14001 certified. That's the environmental norm, the international environmental norm. And so everything we do, we ensure that it is, I mean, in relation, it aligns to the norm. when we construct, when we build houses that's in construction, when we do water supply networks, when we're talking about energy, solar, everything we ensure. For every house, for every building that we construct, we ensure that we plant the appropriate number of trees that is going to compensate for the loss. For example, the waste disposal, we also have a policy for that. We have an environmental management system. We have an environmental management system. So we ensure that the waste is disposed properly in order not to pollute the water, in order not to pollute the air. We try as much as we can to mitigate all this. That's what we try to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, when you're talking about pollutants or the air quality, Bashiru was talking about sea level rising, how that affects coastal. Luisa was talking about, you know, Cameroon and the intensifying heat, right? All of this affects planting and agriculture, right? So like the consequences are so distributed across a global world, and yet the cause and effect are very dispersed, right? We know that, using carbon has been happening for centuries, and now, you know, how it's distributed in terms of the impact is so diverse. So I think you're absolutely right in terms of having that global picture, but also the local advocacy at a national level, at a local level, to be able to adapt to particular contexts.
On that as well, when I was executing the first time I was learning, when I was taking on my training for public interest litigation with the Center for Strategic Litigation in Arusha, they were going through my work and they asked, why are you bringing climate change here? You have clearly been focusing on the right to a clean and healthy environment. So why are you talking about climate change? I said, because they're intertwined somehow, somewhere, you know, they are literally directly linked to each other. They told me, no, that is not what you should do. You should really focus on the right to a clean and healthy environment, because the people you're handling are people on the grassroots. These people do not understand what climate change is. In fact, it has very big terminologies. They will not care to sit down and listen things they do not understand. They told me, when you look at your audience, know what they want, know what they understand, for you to get your message across very much more clearly. Don't use big terminologies like climate change. Look at what is affecting them. For example, what Louise was saying about the extreme heat and the extreme rain. Use that. Start with, we are experiencing, when it's hot, it is too hot. When the rain is there, it is too. You use small terminologies for the audience you have. You tailor your explanation to the audience you have, so that dissemination of information on climate change is spread wide without necessarily using the word climate change.
Totally right. It's where we relate to people, we find where they're at, what they're experiencing, what things they find to be challenges and difficulties. That's where you can say, well, we want to fix this together, and how can we go about it, right? So I want to build on that point a little bit, because you've each mentioned kind of different levers that you're using to advance this goal of a just and sustainable, you know, environmental future. Bashiru has mentioned youth mobilization, working with the youth. Aisha, you've mentioned kind of litigation and thinking about the role of the courts. And Louise, you've also mentioned local governance, right? Thinking about really bottom up, but like, what can local governments do at the mayoral council or, you know, at that level? So if you could each tell us, like, in your context in Sierra Leone, in Uganda, Cameroon, how are you thinking about working with that lever to make progress around, advancing environmental justice?
Working in the youth sector, as you said, Africa has a very large youth population. Mm-hmm. And the young people, every decision we are making today, they are like having a more potential to be impacted in the future, because they are going to live with those policies. So we're trying to engage, empower, and educate young people for them to be represented in most of these decisions. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time when community leaders, world leaders are making these decisions, they forget to bring to the table young people. And when we are in Glasgow in 2021, we organize a protest for us to have a platform for youths at Sharm el-Sheikh. Mm-hmm. And I was part of that demonstration. And it was so fulfilling that they adhere to us. So that is trying to say, because at Sharm el-Sheikh, there was a booth for both youths and children. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, we are now like recognizing the most vulnerable group in the society that are to be impacted by climate change. We need to educate the children at a younger age. What is this problem? What is the impact of this problem? And how can we provide potential solution? Because most of the people currently, we are not opportune at that age for them to be exposed to this information. So that is what we're doing. Currently, like in my country, Sierra Leone, I have actually drafted a project where I want to institute. I am like building an institution that is going to be specialized in providing education on climate change and environmental justice for young people and also kids in public schools, as well as provide them skills that they could use to solve problems. As they were saying, like skills like recycling. How can we use the plastic that's now has become a serious problem in our society for us to transform plastic waste to other usable goods, entrepreneurial skills, self-management skills, leadership skills. Like in Africa, one of the biggest challenges we are having is a problem of leadership. And the young people are supposed to be taught how to lead. And most of the time, our leaders are not consciously educated about leadership. They are just fortunate to be in leadership positions, and we are expecting them to perform. So I am currently, as you ask, I am currently building that structure with a minimal finance from an organization here in the US called HBCU Green Fund. So that is exactly what I am doing.
Very interesting, and I love that connection. And Aisha, how do you see it when we're thinking about the lever of using litigation, the legal route, courts? You know, is this a venue that you think is kind of promising?
Well, in the words of Professor Mbazira Christopher, he's called the grandfather of public interest litigation in Uganda. He said the courts have never really made a change. Okay, they have made a change, but not a revolution. Mm-hmm. They will deliver judgment, but the rest is to you. Mm-hmm. However, he told us, this is not to tell you that I am discouraging you from pursuing litigation. It is to tell you that don't only focus your mind on litigation, focus your mind on the other sisters of litigation, like advocacy and, you know, other things like that, social media advocacy and other things. However, with climate justice and public interest litigation in line of the protection to, I keep calling it the right to a clean and healthy environment because this is what I'm used to doing. I mostly just commend the society, the Ugandan Society of Environmental Lawyers, public interest litigation lawyers. So we have actually a WhatsApp group for this. So whenever something is up, you will post in the group and people will be extremely alert. They'll tell you, you need this kind of person. You need this. This is what you'll need for it. I feel like it is extremely promising. First, because currently the judiciary is not so embracing on the right, because they keep saying you lawyers want to make it seem like nature can speak. Mm-hmm. Like you're trying to bring nature to court, mm-hmm, to sue. Nature cannot sue. So there, it's a bit of a pull and push, mm-hmm, situation of sort, but it is actually quite promising because the lawyers are relentless. The environmental lawyers are relentless. The best way we can is come to court and seek, for example, orders like an injunction against polluters as we do other things, as we wait, as we find other avenues. I feel like litigation is quite promising because, for example, for the project I'm handling, when it comes to that particular pollutant, you will use these other avenues, but then when they see a court document, they're going to start shaking. They're going to start bringing suggestions. They're going to want mediation. They're going to, you know, they're going to want something. And even though not many judicial officers are accepting of these rights or fighting for these rights, there are some who are actually open to the arguments. There are some who are open to the arguments of protecting the environment.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, there's such a variety, you know, access to information so that you can increase transparency and accountability so people know what's happening, and then more activist or advocacy strategies to change or to block certain things, right? Like there are many different ways in which court can be used. And Luis, what about you? And we're thinking about local governance. How is that a tool or a lever for this clean and healthy environment, in Aisha's words?
I think that with local development policies, we can write the policies in such a way as to think about the well-being of people. Because when we think about it, when we look at it as the well-being of people, then we remove our eyes of the infrastructures, even the environment, and we think about the human being. When we think about the well-being of the human, then everything becomes natural. When you think about the well-being of Aisha, if I'm thinking about the well-being of Aisha, I'll not just think about what she has to eat, but I'll think about if she eats this today, what is it going to produce in her like in a month's time? So I think local development or local governance has this role, or will have this role, to not only educate the population, but put in place policies that, when implemented, will really converge towards the well-being, towards making the locality, the community, a place to be, where people can grow properly, where people can go to school properly, where people can, breathe a proper air. So I think that's it.
Let me jump in a little bit, since I am working in local government. I'm just going to build on. So this is already her idea. I'm just building on her idea. As local government, we go back to why they put decentralization. We are the people who deal with the grassroots people. So we shall see. We shall see through implementation of national policies or of already signed policies, other policies that we are signatories to. So with local government, we first of all look at enforcement of those policies, and we see enforcement of environment impact social assessment in areas and abiding by those environmental impact social assessment. How? Our local government, for example, the Njeri municipality, has an environmental officer who has possession of all the assessments of factories in that area. So him having access to them knows the level of pollution allowed or what they should not go above. So local government has access to all that information. Local government is supposed to make that information accessible to every person. Local government has actually also a mandate, because in Uganda, I keep using Uganda because it is what I'm familiar with, the Local Government Act gives each local government a mandate to protect its environment somehow. So you're not supposed to just look on something and, you know, you're supposed to also put in measures of dissemination of information on the right to a clean and healthy environment in your people, because you are the grassroots people. So, for example, in my municipality, we do investigations or inspections of these various factories. We see different things, factories, hospitals, schools, and see, are they abiding to what they signed? Are they abiding to the investment code? Are they abiding to the constitution? Are they abiding to the acts and different contracts anyway they signed? We see through implementation of those laws by seeing if they are acting in line of what is allowed of them. So at local government, if you fail, if you look the other way, and people have to go to the national government, local government in a way has failed its protection of the right to a clean and healthy environment or to sustainable development.
But really the connection between local government, national, and the arms of the national government, like the judicial system, the bureaucracy, right, and citizen engagement, like local government is a key link in that chain, youth engagement, right? When that's a place where people can get involved and also come when they see government, something is not working or, you know, report a complaint.
I wanted to say that one of our roles too is to ensure that local government or the regional and local authorities are actually the safe space where the population can come for whatever the situation that is. You were talking about complaints. That's what it's about. That is, we are aware of the fact that these officials are elected, and so they don't necessarily have the skills, the technical skills, and all the resources to do what they have to do. So we provide this assistance, technical assistance, financial assistance, of course, human too, to all the resources that they need in order to make their community or their locality the place to be. So just like Aisha was saying, it's really at the local level. The mayor, for example, will come to us with a project. He will say, okay, I would like to build this. I would like my community, because we don't have access to drinking water. We will find a way to fund that. And then during the implementation or during the design part of it, because I'm talking about the implementation, but actually the assistance starts at the design. During the design phase, we ensure that all the measures are taken in order to mitigate all the environmental impacts, all the impacts on the environment and everything that is climate and everything actually.
Exactly. Such a key, really, you know, connecting point for citizens, that kind of top down to bottom up leverage. So I want to end by asking each of you a question that we ask every guest on this podcast, which is, what have you been reading that you would like to recommend to our listeners? It could be a novel, it could be, you know, academic work related to your research, your careers, it could be nonfiction, whatever you like. What would you share with our listeners that you've been reading?
Yeah, actually, I read a lot of books, but on climate change and climate justice, the book that I have inspired me so much is called Climate Change is Racist. Mm-hmm. It is by Jeremy Williams. If you read the book, you will see how the inequality that's underpin the problem of climate change. You will realize that the issue of climate change is just like all other problems that we have had previously, mm-hmm. like colonialism, like racism, like social injustice, civil rights. So he tried to relate them to how the global north has also like brought climate change as a way to subdue global west. This is a very interesting book. You can read it.
Okay, perfect. We'll come back to you. And Luis, what about you? What would you like to share with our listeners?
So I have two books. I have one book that I'm actually reading and one book that I love. I've read it like 2-3 times. So the book I'm actually reading is Sustainability and Sustainable Development by Lisa Benton. I really, really love it because it like talks about the perspectives of local development, the perspectives of sustainable development and sustainability is like really diverse. It's not only from one point of view, it's really diverse. So I like it. And the second book is Girls with Swords. It doesn't talk about local development and sustainability, but I love it because it actually, you see, empowering young girls, that's what it's about. It's really about empowering young girls, telling them you have just the right arms, you have the right weapons in your hands to become whoever you want. And that's where all the policies we are trying to implement, the education policies, the funding policies even intended for the local and regional authorities, all those policies play a role in that point. That is, if we're telling them you have the right to become whoever you want to be, then we should create the safe space, we should create the environment in which they could grow and get all the equipping to become who they want to be.
That's amazing. All right, Aisha, over to you.
Oh, okay. So mine is actually quite brief. It's by Law Environment and Development Journal. This is from Uganda, and it's about some reflection on judicial protection of the right to a clean and healthy environment in Uganda. Basically, it just talks about the justiciability of the right in the country. So it just reaffirms a lot of things about the protection of the right and the role of the judiciary in its protection.
I want to thank each of you so very much for being with us today, Bashiru, Aisha, Luis, and for sharing your experiences, your expertise, and your passion for creating a just climate future and a clean and healthy environment that we all can share in. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Ufahamu Africa. You can find more episodes, show notes, and transcripts on our website, ufahamuafrica.com. This podcast is produced and managed by Megan DeMint, with help from production assistants Chukwufunanya Ikechukwu and Ami Tomoklo. We are generously supported by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and receive research assistance from Cornell University and the University of California, Riverside. Our music is courtesy of Kevin McLeod. Until next week, Safiri Salama.